submission, a big one at local school is inspiring guide each student to his or her maximum potential. And I'd like to call this meeting to order with Jeremy taking us to the roll call.
Mr. Kropp.
Here.
Mrs. Dorsch.
Here.
Mr. Fuji.
Here.
Mrs. Lee.
Here.
Mr. Schneider.
Here. All right. That'll take us to item 6 in the superintendent's report.
All right. The first item that I want to go to there under 6.2 is the calendar. Just a reminder, we did talk about this at the end of the year and kind of waiting to make sure that we were okay with construction. We've known from day one it was going to be tight on the elementary. Doug and I and Jeremy talked with the construction folks, and they say they're still on schedule. And I think, as Doug likes to say, don't give them another week or we'll take it. So we are moving forward with a recommendation on next week's agenda with the draft calendar that was presented and that you have there again. We did have some feedback that came in. Mark and Claire kind of work on that. So I don't know if there's anything that you want to share on that.
I believe, if I recall correctly, the one adjustment is the fair day was moved from the 14th to the 21st, just because the Delaware County Fair did come out with their dates now, and we have those. So the 21st is the fair day instead of the 14th.
So the first draft had the 14th. Claire checked the site. It wasn't up yet, and then it came out. Somebody, that was something a community member shared. So people were looking at it. I will tell you that, you know, we do get a little negative feedback. Obviously, with where the calendar has hit the last couple of years, we are coming back earlier than some of the districts do. But we also have other days off during the year that some districts don't have. So it's kind of, as I tell the calendar committee, we have to go to school sometime. We did move next year, though, the teacher work day to that first day back, so that helps a little bit. People do like having that Monday after Easter off. We've gotten really positive feedback on that. And then we've always used our staff professional development on one on Delaware County Fair Day and one on the Monday after Thanksgiving, so I think our families are kind of used to that, so we want to maintain that. So that would be probably the only, I would say, minor grumbling I've heard is people don't like coming back. But we've also heard some people say it's really nice to come back with a shorter week, kind of like at the beginning of the school year. The one year that we started school on a Monday, I thought the staff was going to mutiny because it's just really rough to get kids back into a groove and the adults as well. So it's kind of nice coming back with a shorter week to start. So overall, I still feel comfortable, even though not everybody likes it. We know that you're always going to have mixed opinions on everything, that this is a good calendar for us.
I just add to that, always with the winter break especially, that's always probably the biggest one that we get feedback on, goods and bads, because it depends on where Christmas falls. If it's in the middle of the week like this year, it's a lot harder to make the break work and come back at January 5th or 6th versus a January 2nd. And so you'll see next year's calendar, and it's just next year that we're approving. Next week, we did put the 21-22 on there just for knowledge and thinking through. But that's not for approval at this time. You will see it's a little later next year, which is January 4th for staff and January 5th for students.
I had a parent last week ask me why January 2nd or 3rd, and I said, well, we could do this, or we could come back for 2 days after Memorial Day. What do you want to do? And he's like, okay. But it's just that balance. I mean, you got to put the days in somewhere, right? Yeah.
And we feel that they're more productive days there than they are 2 days after Memorial Day in terms of learning. So.
That would be true in my house.
Might as well. So again, not asking you to vote today, but just wanted to kind of give you an update on that. And then the big discussion point that I had for today involves Doug, and he's here with the construction update. Brad was able to join us for an athletic design meeting right before our break. And we just want to kind of give you an update on where things are overall and get some direction and guidance from the board on moving forward. But I'll let Doug kind of walk through things. I know we have a couple other items there. And then Brad, obviously, feel free to chime in as well. We were all at that meeting with anything that you want to share.
I'll go backwards for 1 second on the schedule, just to share right now the construction schedule. Has us having the rights to move into the new school, Prairie Elementary, on August 4th. So we've given ourselves about a week and a half before school starts, which is a decent amount of time, enough time to kick the tires and be in. So That's another reason we're comfortable staying to the schedule as recommended. Athletics. I'm going to take a step back, especially for the two new board members. When the high school GMP, Guaranteed Maximum Price Contract, was approved in August, at that time, in order to try and stay somewhat in budget, I'll say, the board made the heavy decision to give direction for site athletics in terms of what we would do or not do. And that's what we've come back with. The design team's come back with after meetings with the AD. There was even a meeting Angie alluded to with the coaches. That's not reflected in the design, but that was their chance to kind of give us feedback. So the scope was already kind of skinnied up a little bit. For instance, we went from two softball fields to one. Master plan still shows it if you start looking at the drawings, the very first page. One baseball instead of two. There was a mandate in terms of number of seats in the football stadium, visitor and home. Number of tennis courts, five. So what's reflected in terms of kind of the future versus darkened in on this graphic here, that's what the board approved. And then there was a budget approved, with, or an estimate, I should say, that became the budget. And that's what we see on this first sheet here, this one-page document. It says construction pricing history in the red on the top. And so that 5.233343, that reflects the scope, which I just kind of walked you through very quickly, in terms of one baseball, one softball, five tennis, a football stadium, a concession stand, and some of the components related to that. So 5.2 and change was the budget, and that's what we incorporated. That's what, in terms of where we were headed, gave direction of the team to design.
If I could point out, remember that was never our original budget, it was higher.
Correct.
But it became our budget because we were experiencing, even though we did lots of value engineering with the cost of the construction, we were seeing the other two buildings be over, especially the high school. And so we had decided, this group decided, the previous board, to go ahead and decrease that budget, at least for the time being, so that we could get the other buildings moving, and then we have some decisions to make, which is where we are today.
That's true. There were discussions. I mean, there were opportunities to reduce, for instance, the size of the high school. But again, where the board was advised or given information relative to that was to redesign, to shrink the building, to go less than would be more costly and more timely and schedule-wise than possibly this harder short-term issue of reducing the site athletics. So the $5.2 million is where we move forward, and so we've since started design roughly in September with the architect, the AD's office, the administration. And the documents as drawn came back at the $7.144 million. So you can see a delta of almost $2 million. And that's not a pill we can swallow by just cutting something here or there, unfortunately, on the site. So what I wanted to just walk you through, make sure you understand the basics. In terms of the drawings, I'll walk you through real quick. So again, the cover sheet just kind of gives you the overall site plan. You can see each of the items. Again, as you walk through, there's not a whole lot of graphics, but this is what we're sharing with the coaches. Page 2 just kind of shows you, again, kind of a blow-up of where those items are. And again, the key thing is there's a master plan. They add items later. The tennis courts, again, you can see there's still fencing around it. They're all still complete entities when they're done in terms of the ones that we're doing. So, again, it's not a less than or reduced scope for the tennis. It's a complete tennis facility, but only relative to the five courts, for instance. The football, probably I do want to point out there's a couple things on there that we've included that were not necessarily a line item on the budget. For instance, you can see, and I'm on this graphic, and I apologize with the crack on it. I'm just going to point out a couple of features. The food truck parking is something. I know we do have food trucks now, so there's a desire to try to capture some of that. Kind of the biggest thing, actually, to our benefit, the concession stand has been designed so the toilet facilities can be used and sized according to event. So a simple way to look at it is there's a door in the middle of, if this was an entire run of fixtures, imagine this gate can come down, and if we only want to use half the facility, we can. If we want to use the whole facility for our football versus it's for baseball or something, we have that luxury to kind of mandate and regulate use of it and also access to it.
And the idea of keeping, if it's like football, we can separate home and visitors, but for like a big track meet where it's lots of different schools, you don't really need to do that. You can just leave the whole thing open.
I apologize. The next page has the concession stand on it, but I'm going to the back. So you'll see on the plan on the left, dead center of the building, you'll see home and men, and you'll see visitor, men and women, and there's a rolling overhead door. And so the concept is, it was something our AD had seen in another facility. I really like the fact that we don't have this humongous restroom that's open to the public at all times for any and all events. It can be shrunk and sized accordingly. Also accessed in terms of whether it's from the inside the football stadium or outside the football stadium, so to speak, in terms of how we get to it. But that building, in terms of the budget, is probably the most expensive one in terms of its budget versus its reality. And I do want to point out one of the things that's driving that is the number of toilets, to be blunt. We are already, as a team, recommending to the architect that we reduce by roughly 40% the number of fixtures, toilets, that code requires.
I mean, they have an issue by code. It was so many. I'm like, we have three women's stalls now. It was like 40 or 50.
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, can you imagine the public if they walk in and there's 50 toilets in the women's restroom?
Like, so we've already taken measures to reduce the size, because obviously plumbing's very expensive, fixtures are expensive. We are still, we believe, possibly larger than what the district would need based on current allocation. And if we were to roll that up, number of toilets per seats, what we have now versus number of toilets per seat, this expanded facility, we are still greater than that. But that is a cost that's still sitting here. I will say this is not an approved variance. We actually have to go to the state of Ohio and request a variance to reduce the quantity. Typically, I'm going to go in the weeds. Typically, they give you a variance because you're close enough to an adjoining building. We, unfortunately, are greater than the, I forget the magic number, I want to say it's 100 feet. If our high school was within 100 feet of this concession stand, we could say, hey, we're going to use those toilets, we're good. We are greater than that distance. We can still play that card. We can also say, in theory, that we're going to bring in porta-johns. But couple, what we're looking for from the board today is really, what are some big picture decisions in terms of seats are obviously, and I'll go back to the value engineering list in a second. What are things you feel we could delay, possibly consider locally funding, meaning we maybe work with one of the athletic boosters? That's a bigger topic, I realize, than today. But what can we do? What, if anything, is the board willing to, I'd say, give up or delay to try and negate the delta? Again, we could reduce more toilets, and we'll go back to the DE list in a second. But that is subject to state approval.
If I could jump in, too, and Brad, please. I know we've had a discussion. So one option is to try to reduce down to that amount. The other option is so the board could make a decision. We have interest on our bonds that could be allocated to it if we wanted to still purchase some of the scope. And we also have some bond funds after the security project allocation and after the original budget here that are still unallocated. I know initially our thought was that we would use that extra money to help renovate the existing buildings, especially as we transition. I'll just give you my personal opinion on this, and obviously it'll be your decision, but I feel like we put a bond issue on in 2016 that included money to do that, and it was voted down. And so I would be hesitant to provide a lesser product on the new builds when that's what was passed, because we're trying to save money back to take care of buildings. Not that I don't think they need taken care of, but I'd rather... My opinion is that we do this right, and then we piecemeal the rest like we have been with our PI money. But that's a decision that we wanted to bring to you today, because we need to know, are we trying to get down to 5.2 million, or are we wanting to add funds? And Jeremy, I don't know if you could talk about kind of what's available that they could consider.
So as of today, I have booked in interest just shy of $1.9 million. In addition to that, as Angie noted, we have our bond levy as a whole was for issuing bonds of $1.8 million. $2 million of that has gone to the security projects, and $1.48 million is what is currently allocated to the high school and elementary. That leaves $1.2 million of unallocated proceeds. So that together, I would it wouldn't be my recommendation that we allocate all $3.1 million, but there is around $3 million that could be allocated to this project.
And we have an additional with our agreement with Sunbury that added how much additional money that wasn't already in this budget?
Probably about $500,000.
So if you think about this amount, $500,000 of this needs to go toward what we agreed with, basically the turn lane with Sunbury or whatever's left. We do have a meeting today with Polte. So Brad, you're able to make that. Jeremy and I are meeting, I think Doug's in that as well, with Sunbury and Polte to see if we can get some movement on the sewer tap fee. But worst case scenario, we're looking at $500,000 that would be added to the project that's not currently in the budget. So that would most likely come out of this amount. That would leave some, I don't know if you want to go back to the entire designed amount. I will tell you one thing that we talked about was if we're cutting down to one softball baseball field to start, we wanted to be able to turf those infields so that we have something, the idea being we're getting something better than we have now. Because we're in Ohio, obviously a lot of softball and baseball games get rained out. It's very difficult to get games in the spring. So our coaches were very excited, as you can imagine, about that prospect to get the kids more games in. So my recommendation would be that we, you know, I think it's more valuable to have one turf field than to put in two cheaper, you know, cheap as you can put them in fields, for each, because it'd be about a wash that way. But one of the value, if you look at this sheet, one of the value engineering options is to go back to dirt turf instead of artificial turf in those, to get it down to this 5.2. So that,
for both.
So those are some of the options. So I guess where we need some direction from you all before we get any farther down the road, if we want to get these facilities in, obviously we need to keep moving forward with the design. And so don't need an answer this second, but at least wanted to kind of lay out to you what the question is so maybe we can make a decision next week. Do you want us to continue making value engineering choices that we can present to you to get down to the 5.2, or do we want to allocate some of the additional funds that we have to the athletics project? Brad, I know if you have anything to add to that.
Yeah, I guess just a couple things from being in that meeting and just my general feelings overall. So I feel like, kind of back to your point about what the public asked us to do with those monies, I really balk at the notion of the 5.2 investment, because whether you like it or not, one of the visual representations of this facility will be the athletics. And while I feel good about what we've built inside of our walls, there are many, many members of our community that will never really realize the value and the impact of the things we've done inside the walls, but they will make the judgment if they show up at a graduation or they come to a football game or if there's a community event there or what have you. And so I really bristle at the thought of going at that 5.2 number. I would be in favor of using some of those other funds that haven't been encumbered in other ways to try to bridge that gap. The second thing that I wanted to kind of bring up, and I mentioned this to Brian Shelton at that meeting, I talked to Angie about it the other day, but I think I'd also like to see a little more clarity about what are district-related expenses when it comes to facilities for athletics, and what are we asking for either private support or our booster clubs to take on. For instance, there was a request related to the track structure of wanting to have a second jump pit in the discussion in that day, and I'm by all means, I'm never going to sit here and tell people that are experts that no, you can only have one. But to me, that's a question of, okay, when we look at something like that, is it okay, we as a district, we're going to take that on, or are we going to say, okay, that sounds great and here's the cost for that and you guys can do some things with private funding to pay us back to cover that? Or do we do a price match kind of thing where, hey, we fund half of this and you bring it back? Or to me, it's just not really clear on some of those things, because with some of the other sports, like in baseball and softball, there were ideas like that. And then it's just kind of assumed that our booster clubs are taking those things on. And so I think there's probably a discussion to be had at a greater level of what sort of a capital expense the district takes on, and what are some of these other things that I guess I would put in the nice-to-have bucket that everybody's free to do with private resources and ways we can assist where we can. But not necessarily just saying, yep, we'll put that into this budget as well. And I know that's not going to, you know, wipe away $1.9 million or anything like that. But to me, this is the answers here are a series of small decisions like that that add up to have more of a significant value, with us also taking a look at some of those funds that aren't encumbered. And I guess that's the direction that I would like to explore, is how do we kind of do a little bit of both? What VE-wise makes sense? What are VE items that we can say, okay, here's things we want to go for private funding on, and private approaches to that, or some sort of hybrid approach to that? You know, maybe we do take on the expense of that in the near term, and we ask a booster club or for an investment to pay it back over a period of time for a portion of it. And I'm just throwing ideas out here. I'm not, you know, putting down the mandate or whatever, but these are just some different ways that have popped in my head that we might be able to bridge that gap between 5.2 and 7.1 without it just having to be a yes or no answer out of us.
And I know, for example, using the different turf company, they thought Brian wanted one and he really didn't care. They just didn't have to work with one.
Yeah.
So there are things on here already that we would recommend accepting, like utilizing Mommy Band's Move Moss, for example, is $150,000 right there. Brian was comfortable with that. That's an easy, no-brainer, get the same product, basically. So there are some things that we already know we would do. There are some things that I don't want to do if I don't have to.
Yeah, just a couple other things that I wanted to add to where I was going is, one, I'm in favor of keeping things that differentiate us. So if we think about these facilities as attempting to either try to generate revenue for the district or for the individual programs that could then take on, like I think about the turf replacement cost 10 years down the road, right? If we went that route, one of the benefits I think of turf is you've got the ability to use that field for a variety of different rental opportunities that help build that fund up to take care of all that maintenance you're basically deferring for 10 years. And so I'd like to look at things that differentiate us so that we can use them as an advantage. And then what goes along with that too, which I think kind of flies in the face of most of the things we've traditionally done as a district, is if we're going to have things like turf fields, there's going to be a whole host of community members outside of school participation that are going to want to participate. And our model traditionally has been basically free. I mean, you have to have a staff member and some things of that nature. And I think for some of these, for lack of a better term, premium types of opportunities we have, I think we have to seriously look at changing that model, not to, you know, try to make a ton of bucks off the backs of the people in our community, but there needs to be more of a revenue flow coming back into us to support some of these things at that higher level, if we're going to spring for some of these facilities that are more year-round or have more weather capabilities or even having multiple usable aux court gyms, because you know somebody's going to come and want to host a tournament here, and they're going to ask us to do it and want to do it with the benefit of just having a janitor in the building. And while I appreciate their desire to want to raise some money, they probably need to be kicking in a few more bucks. Again, not necessarily market rate or whatever, but just something so that we can kind of get the community used to. We want to give where we can, but this may be a time right now where we can't necessarily completely give. And so maybe we're more helpers than givers, if that's maybe a way to think of it. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
if I can add just two pieces. I've been to way too many trainings about private money coming in, and I think we should probably go into any of these projects planning on paying for the whole piece, and then if we do get some funding that helps us, then that can be used for other projects. There's just way too many horror stories where there's the handshake and you say, yeah, we'll pay for this stadium, this structure, and then the money doesn't come. So that's just...
Or you're driving a new Lexus.
Sure. Yeah.
Or a Tesla.
I mean, they now have an affordable model.
I could pass that one up.
You kind of assist a superintendent driving a Tesla. I'm like, but they have an affordable model.
Yeah. And then the other piece is coming from my prior district. It would be my recommendation that when we do have these turf fields, just as you're saying, that maybe we do set up a whole separate fund, because it's a big number. It's a hard pill to swallow in 10 years or 15 years, whenever it is, to then have those funds to be able to pay for completely redoing your turf field or
We've already talked about that to Brian, the expectation would be that these facility rental fees would be going into a fund to pay for that, that we're not going to just be able to take it out of our budget.
But in accounting-wise, just specifically having that fund that the board can even track on a monthly basis through the financial statement in that one report, saying that, hey, here's what our synthetic turf fund, or whatever we call it, this is how we're doing on a year-to-year basis.
Excuse my ignorance, but what exactly is the relationship between the school district and any of the booster organizations? I mean,
there are 501c3 organizations that support us. So they're parent-driven organizations. They do fundraising activities to help purchase and offset things. So some, they've kind of come under one umbrella in recent years, which hasn't always been the case, but some of those groups are very active, I think, to Brad's point, and some are not. So I think what's happened over the years is because baseball, for example, has been a fundraising machine and has been able to put a lot of that field out. We have a premier field because they've raised a lot of that. Then it almost becomes like an expectation, well, you guys can kind of pay for your stuff, but this group over here that's not fundraising as much, maybe we're paying for it. So I think that was where we're trying to get it a little more equitable. But basically, they are raising funds to help purchase and supplement things we're able to buy.
So they're covered under 9211 of our board policy, support organizations. And I kind of like to explain them as being a almost symbiotic relationship. We need them, but they're not us.
Kind of like TTOs.
They all fit in that same category. Both boosters and PTOs, they would not exist if it was not for us. They would have no purpose to exist. So they are a support organization for our school district or a specific building in the case of PTOs.
But there's no expectation from each as to what they will provide.
Correct.
And we
kind of at their mercy. They have their own boards. They decide how they spend their money. Yeah, so we can ask, but at the end of the day, with any of those groups, they decide how they spend it.
Yeah, they are their own legal entity.
So we provide the concession stand at no cost to them, and they raise their money through the sale, or?
I don't know a lot on the concession, how they
do
that.
Music boosters, is that? Or athletic boosters.
Well, they're
not paying a...
My point is, they're a 501(c)(3), which makes them private, which doesn't require them to inform us of their monetary funds.
I think they have to require, they just don't need, or they have to inform, they just don't need our permission on what they spend. It has to be spent on, like, for example, a baseball booster or GRE's PTO. GRE's PTO, they have to spend it on GRE, but they decide if they want to bring in COSI on wheels or if they want to buy all the kids a book. You know what I mean? Just as an example. They have to tell us. They can't just hide it or do anything else with the money, but they decide.
So they account to us for the revenue that they produce.
Yes.
Okay.
And theoretically, there's training that Jeremy provides them that the football club can't then, you know, offset the coach's salary. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's specific things that I think Jeremy has a responsibility of notification for and oversight of.
We could probably do better on the educational pieces with our support organizations. And I know talking with Brian, I mean, one of our largest is the athletic boosters. And depending on the leadership in place, sometimes there is more of a challenge in getting the information that we would like than other times. But yes, there is a kind of that back and forth
which is kind of my point. In other words, there's no written agreement as far as the use of a concession stand or this or that we can require, at least on an annual basis, an auditing.
Not that I'm aware of.
Do we have a written agreement with them?
Not that I'm aware of, but there could be something deep in files that I haven't seen yet.
Should we have a written agreement with them?
It never hurts to have something documented, the relationship.
It's an evolving relationship, I understand.
Yeah.
And back in the day, I can tell you, the current football stadium was built 100% by the boosters. The district didn't pay anything. So the evolution of the two entities is kind of like the handshake days.
Sure.
But we need to get it, I think, reduced to a written document that would grant us the ability to be more informed.
I know they have bylaws and things. I just don't, obviously we're not as deeply ingrained in some of those as we are some of the other organizations in the district. So like the athletic boosters, they have bylaws that spell some of that out, and Brian attends those meetings and he's involved with them. So I can't sit here and say exactly what they have. I could find out from Brian.
The evil part of the 501(c)(3)s is the fact that they can become self-serving and internally spend their money on internal people. Okay? And that's something I don't think that we want. We want to see the benefit of...
I think the merging of all of them into one, they've gotten a lot more organized. There are a lot more people involved, which lends a layer of accountability with the finances. Brian Shelton and Josh Frame have both been involved with that from our end. And then they have sub-accounts through there, but it used to be like volleyball had their own account, basketball, girls basketball had an account, and it was just way too much for anybody to kind of keep track of. But I think them all kind of merging and coming under the same umbrella, and now you've got officers on that board from different sports, I think it's lended a little more checks and balances and level of accountability to the finances than when you just had each group having its own separate entity.
I have three questions. To Doug's point, the conversation of the historical information in the building of the football field. Also, when the clubs are doing that or the organizations are doing that, there are some things that where corners get cut, which probably lends to the drainage problems on that field, which then impact the track.
Football back then wasn't what it is today.
Yeah, understood. But I think that, you know, the governing codes with those things, and then that becomes a board responsibility for the fixing of.
Correct.
So that becomes...
Still dealing with that track.
Right, still dealing with the track. So that becomes my question, and I appreciate that Brad points out that this is the interface that many of the community members have before they would ever experience something else within the confines of the walls of the school. So if we have a current construction budget of $5.2 million, and initially that's even pared down from what was...
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So the
we move that over to the inside of the building.
So help me with that historical knowledge. We are at 5.2. Before it got to 5.2, it was articulated or priced at 8?
Probably roughly at one time.
So I would hate to see us try to cut down. I, not making a decision in this moment, would hate, to echo what you said, Brad, to see us cut down even further from that when that wasn't what was articulated to the community to begin with, always knowing that cuts are made. I'm wondering what the idea of the principles in making those cuts might be to get from 8 to 5.2 and now back up somewhere, whether we make 7.1 or not. What would be the guiding principles that we would have with that, one? And two, what would the agreements need to look like with the organizations that would be using that, whether it's an update to a facility use agreement, whether it's an update or requirement of our booster organizations, or if it's, you know, we'll put up the cash now to pay down the road. The last thing in terms of the replacement funds that I have a question on is really relative to the entrance of the stadium. That I think also our community will look at certain, whether we do it this way or that way, the community will look at certain parts of the facility and say, oh my gosh, can you believe they did this or that? They walled off the gates and we can't any longer walk on the track as free community members, or we don't have access to these things, and yet they put this huge sweeping wing at the top. Those types of ideas just lend themselves to my question of what should the guiding principles be in terms of making the decision of to cut or not to cut and where to cut.
lost track of all those. I had a comment on the first question.
Sorry.
So the first question?
The first one was relative to the history and the oversight of the organizations, because otherwise, you know, the baseball facility, I think, is done the correct way, where 60 years ago, 50 years ago, when the football facility was put in, wasn't that long ago, it would have been after the 90s.
Oh, the
it
football?
Was
it was redone, but the original,
yeah, so yeah.
The original Hillcat went in the 60s.
I know what I was going to say. So I think just to give a little more of the history to you two, so why it was cut back was we knew it was last, basically, is the reason. And
it's not academic core business.
Well, in the inside of the building, we wanted to make sure that footprint was right. So if you look at something like being able to add an auxiliary gym and not having what we have currently, that's harder to do after the fact than it is to add 5 more sports.
Auditorium seats.
Yeah. So, which ought to fade on seating, because that's an interesting story, what we learned. But given your history in the current building. So where we were was, we're going to reduce that to make sure we can take care of everything inside. And then knowing that at the end we're going to have bond interest, what is left then, I mean, that was actually a discussion that was had months ago. Then we can make a decision at that point where we want to go with the athletics. But knowing in the design process that the architects laid out, this would be the last piece. That's why. So it wasn't like we just said, oh, we hate athletics, let's cut for that budget. I know you're not saying that.
No.
I'm just explaining to you that's why it's athletics that were reduced, because we knew that was the last piece. It was elementary, high school, well, actually site work, elementary, high school, and then this piece of athletics. So we purposely, I say we, the board, was made a recommendation and agreed to reduce the athletics, knowing we could revisit it at the end when we got to the design phase and make a decision on those additional funds. At that time, we also didn't know what was going to happen with Sunbury. So we had all these random fees hanging out there. Are we going to be required to put $3 million? Not that we were planning on doing that, but, you know, are we going to have to put $3 million in roads in? And now we've spent all this money on fields. So obviously our intent from day one was we want to put it into facilities for the kids, not into roads. But now that number for Sunbury is solidified, and some of the other numbers are already in a guaranteed maximum price for the high school, the elementary, the site work, now we're kind of down to this, and that's kind of where we said we would make a decision. So we left this in the summer. We're going to revisit this when we get to the point of design. We're here. The architect kind of needs to know what direction we are planning. Are we trying to value engineering scale back, or do we want to up the budget with additional funds that are available?
And to go from 8 to 5, that's where the decision was made to reduce the number of fields and courts.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say with the softball, baseball, the original design had 2 fields for each that were dirt. So if we stay with 1 field that's turf, which was very clearly the opinion of the coaches and anybody we've kind of talked with, that's kind of a wash. Okay. So we would not go back to 2 turf fields or even a turf field and 1 dirt field. It would be a turf for each for right now would fit in that original parameter.
But the second question that I kind of had was, what would the differentiators be, knowing that pretty much everybody is standard now to have the turf field? So you're still competing with everybody for band contests or playoff spots or whatever. What would the differentiators be from your mind on this current facility outlay? We're not going to host tennis. We're not going to host a regional tennis tournament with 5 courts or something along those lines.
The one that stands out the most to me differentiator-wise is it's still pretty unique to have turf baseball infields,
right,
and softball infields. So I would think not that they're huge grossing events, but no, some district and regional kind of baseball and softball opportunities are probably in the potential scope of things that couldn't happen here today. For me, the bigger thing is rental opportunities. Everybody and their grandma's having different baseball tournaments and softball tournaments. When you can have basically an all-weather field, that creates a capability. I know from being at Liberty's field with my kids, and one of the things I asked in that meeting is, can you line the field up so that you can have bases at a variety of different lengths? And so everything from your local T-ball team that wanted to do something special, well, even shorter down to like even 45 in some cases. I think the old Tangie's got a really short one. But there's different ways that turf can be used. I mean, you could even potentially rent that to soccer teams and things of that nature, in addition to the football field and things. So I guess for me, those are the kinds of differentiating things. Like, I would rather, in those ways, I would rather put money into a turf field as opposed to a concession stand or additional restroom facilities for those two sports. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And I just wondered if there were other differentiators or if baseball was the primary one in your thought pattern.
Well, and I guess I'm looking for all kinds of other thoughts and opportunities. So, for instance, I don't know enough about the jump pits, but I use the two different jump areas, right? If that makes that facility then capable of hosting somebody's regional or a district meet, then that's a different discussion. You know what I mean? So, you know, those are the kinds of things that I want to try to at least bring up and not just assume that, you know, some groups will do this privately and some groups won't. And for me, those are the things in my mind that help try to make decisions about where do we want to maybe try to avoid the cuts versus some things that we could be able to cut a little bit more effectively.
And Steve, you mentioned the facade of the stadium, and that's something I think, you know, you can give direction on. What we were looking for was that is kind of the showcase of the property in terms of the outside facilities. And that is a facade on the front, so it's not a 3D, I guess would be the term. But it matches, if you look at the building design, it matches the arc in both the elementary and high school in the front entranceway. So that was the idea to tie that in, yeah.
And certainly others, again, others are doing that. You go to Marysville, they just opened their field, it has that. Mm-hmm. You go to Groveport, which has been open for 3 or 4 years now. We're just there, it has that.
Yeah.
So I'm not even saying that's inappropriate. And I know it's an expense, but I'm just asking where those things
are. And I'm asking for feedback from you all because we felt like we wanted it to be not over the top, but to have a little bit of a presence. And so, I mean, that is always an area where we can, and if you look at the VE list on the sheet that Doug gave you, that is simplify exterior facade. So you take all that off and just make it a simple building with gates. We did want the, because the way we have it set up that the home and visitor fans are going into two different sides, we wanted to have something up there. So we put it in the wrought iron. Obviously, that could be put on a much simpler sign that wouldn't look as nice. It may need replaced over the years, but it would be a lot cheaper in the front end. So that's something that, again, as we look at that combination between do we want to allocate additional funds, by way I mean you all, or do we want to VE some things, or is it a combination? That is certainly something we can VE if that's the direction we want to go.
Is there anything in place that is a guiding principle or something documented about how these decisions are made from the board?
In terms of how we got to here, the 5.2?
Or just decision-making in general for we won't cut academics?
I think the conversation on the things we've recommended throughout the project have been things that don't impact kids is always our first priority. So, for example, we were able to shrink the hallway inside of the high school by a foot. It's already 5 feet wider than our current high school hallways, and so we're thinking, and it saved us like $100,000. So nobody will even notice that hallway is a foot narrower. Or the architect wanted to have all the smaller ceiling tiles throughout the entire building. We just put them in the common areas. And did the longer, cheaper ones throughout the rest of the building. That doesn't impact learning. So the kinds of decisions we've made on what to value engineer and what to recommend to the board and the conversation the board has had has typically been around, you know, looking at all those things we could do first that don't compromise education, experiences for kids, aren't going to cause us big maintenance issues down the road. So we've tried to weigh that as well. You know, there's always that sweet spot of maybe you spend a little bit more now, but you're getting double the lifespan out of something. So we've tried to, when we look at things like heating and cooling, making some cuts to, like we did a central energy plant, we were able to save some money by combining those facilities from both buildings into one. But there, like, for example, there was a, like to go up and service it, we kind of downscaled that a little bit where you can climb up there, but it wasn't an enclosed room, for example, on the units.
We want the self-contained rooftop units for air handling units. We made certain decisions. We kind of all weighed all that. The energy, kind of the long-term stewardship of dollars, post-occupancy against best use of current dollars, and how that would weigh in. So, yeah, one of the biggest things we did is reduce mechanical space for some of it on the roof, but we bought a higher premium rooftop unit and have ship's ladders or something so you can actually get up there versus so you can carry something up there. So we've increased our ability to service it and get at it, but reduce the overall footprint and save dollars. But Angie's right. Basically, it was what is necessary that needs built now that's difficult or impossible to add later. There's a huge factor. again, on the stadium itself, the concession stand could be like this is just a split face block, mansard roof, very simple little building. So there's, if that's some direction, there is money definitely in the building still, just on an aesthetic. It could still be exact same building in terms of program and how it functions, but the look of it could be completely different. I did want to go back kind of big picture, and this will be an eye moment. So since I came here, one thing we've tried to do in partnering with the various athletic boosters is, and PTOs, whenever they are recommending or proposing an infrastructure improvement to our sites, be it the handicap playground at Souders, a storage unit at BWE that the baseball wanted to put in there, we're involving various administrative people, myself, Ron McClure, others, to ensure, number one, are they following building codes? We want to see their drawings. We want to see if they have zoning approval. In other words, we're vetting, and that's a good site for it. You're not stopping us or limiting our ability to add to our parking lot later or our building. And so we're making sure they're a partner with us or vice versa in terms of master planning. There's no, to the best of my knowledge, policy that says that. That's something that's kind of organically we started doing and have fed out to many of the groups. Hey, in the future, if you have an infrastructure need, a capital improvement you're proposing, even if something in the building through a grant or whatever, we want to know, we want to be a part of that, we want to be a part of the approval process, even if we're not the funding agents. We've actually started doing that.
And that's been something for years we've always looked at, too, in terms of the, before anybody can add anything, what is the maintenance? Who's taking care of it? Because people always want to add random things all over the district, little memorial gardens, playground equipment, but it has to be something that we're comfortable with taking on the maintenance for, or there's a plan to take care of it. So that's a piece we look at, too.
Doug, I know we've approved maximum prices. I know there's some things out there like...
two things left are furniture, which is, should be coming for this body in February. That was a $2 million budget. And right now, even as of yesterday, even in conversation with the architect, we look like we're still in budget there, or we will be in budget, let me phrase it that way. We're not going over on that package at all. And so that one's going to come to the board for... So that will only leave site athletics. Contingency, which I'm still a little worried, it's a little low if we start talking about where money may need to go. And then site athletics will be the only GMP after furniture that still needs awarded.
And I guess the root of my question is, so if you look at the elementary GMP and we're, you know, theoretically going to be closing that up sometime here in June, July, to the point where you're about 99% sure what the cost is going to be, is there any chance of anything coming under maximum and floating back into the project?
So the maximum won't change. It really goes to that contingency again. That's the fund that ebbs and flows as scope is changing or altering, both plus and minus. So that's the fund we have to monitor, which is combined for the whole project.
I think what he's saying, though, is when that's done, we would get that money back and it could be applied.
There wouldn't, in the GMP, there wouldn't be, that's their guaranteed price, so they're entitled to that money.
I thought it was guaranteed maximum price, and if it comes under, we get money back.
No, only in their owner, only in their CM contingency, which it is tagged by building, if you recall. Every time we've done a GMP, there's a contingency amount for the CM that's added to their contract. In theory, that could come back to us. Most projects usually wait and roll that into the end just to make sure the whole project gets done, but that's the only flexible line. Their guaranteed max is basically they're assuming that risk, so are we, so to speak, but they're assuming the risk in theory that they can do the building for that amount, but that they wouldn't ask for more unless there was an error or a change or something of that nature.
But those contingencies, in full, and I say this with the full respect of the term contingency, right, in terms of the timing of the project, these facilities we're talking about now would be last in line in terms of completion.
These are looking to be under contract this late. This, if we proceed and want to try and expedite the award and construction of the site facilities, we just have to ask that question of the architect and CM. If we give direction in the next week or two, roughly, hey, here's about what we think, or at least here's a budget, here's some scope with it again, they could have it awarded and through the GMP process probably in midsummer.
One of the things they asked, and we can always bump it back, but we have major problems with our track. We've had that discussion ad nauseum, right? It wasn't installed. It was a pretty low budget. We continue to patch it. So if we're able to make a mid-year move into this high school in December 21, January 22, they said, would you want to be able to use the track?
I would like to be able to use the track. Now, it's not a ultimatum. Like, at the end of the day, if we need to use the track at our current facility, we can. But it'd be nice if we're moved into the building to be able to use the track that spring. That's kind of our then working backwards point. They want to bid this summer. If that's not an issue and we're okay with waiting until fall, the other reason I like having it done in the spring, then it's definitely done and we kick the tires, to use Doug's phrase, by the time fall sports hit, versus they're scrambling around finishing it as we're starting fall sports. So that was where my thought process was. But if we're not as worried about that, then we want to wait and see what money we have, we can always tell them, hey, we want to slow down and we can bid it later. But if we want to try to have it done by that spring, then bid docs need to go out this summer is what they're advising.
Okay. So if we took that route, anything that would come back contingency-wise would be sort of the Bob Ross happy accident and, hey, look what we found, versus something you could count on.
Typically, it's a few months after a school opens before the books are finalized. All the bills have come in and everything, to your point. Is there money left over? Can we close out that account? So
we kind of would have an idea in the summer.
We would have an idea, yeah. But in terms of actual money to move, probably wouldn't happen until the fourth quarter, I would think.
Right, and the decisions we'd make would be made far in advance of knowing.
Correct.
Okay, that's where I was trying to get my bearings on. Thanks.
Well, I think it would be our goal to have all of the facility available come spring and move in time. Like, we wouldn't, in my mind, wouldn't want to have kids bus back to play a home field baseball game back on there, what would then be the middle school in waiting.
Right. Yeah, no, I wasn't implying that other than just trying to figure out when's a moment when we can say, okay, we will get a couple bucks here coming back, or it's not happening.
And to Jeremy's point, we talked about this in the meeting, the BSWC in Gilbane, when is the drop dead? Again, to Jeremy's point, bird in hand, we have to have the money in hand minimum when we award. So even if we said there'll be some locally funded exercise, there's only 3, 4, 5 months to do that, just to share if we wanted them to cash up front at award. Now, several things could be alternates. We can always go that way. I will share the team's also looking at, to Angie's point, when she pointed out the bleachers and the manufacturer. If you recall, we did what was called a design assist on the furniture. And so that's instead of putting a package together, the CM bids it, 3 or 4 people try to bid it. Furniture is one of those things that's very hard to say that chair is equal to that chair is equal to that chair. It's very difficult. So is, believe it or not, stadiums, which surprised me, and even turf. They all have a lot of proprietary things and very customized things. And you say, ooh, I like that widget. Well, I don't make that widget. I make this widget. It's a little different. And it's hard for them to bid apples to apples. So we're proposing and starting to take steps to do a design assist on the stadium and the artificial turf as well, thinking that'll give us parity and get us a number sooner. We'll basically be locking someone in much sooner in the process. So we're not waiting until the summer to go, oops, turf came in and it's $200,000 more than we thought, because even though we had competition, and that's what we were projecting here on this VE list, didn't work out. We would actually marry up through Gilbane, or propose to marry up through Gilbane with one of them now, and say, this is our number, or this is where we're at pending this conversation. Get us a stadium for this dollar. These are the features we want. Very similar, we did the furniture.
This we had interviews with them. They had to present kind of, so it's more of that process. It's almost like when we hired the architect, those who were involved, that's kind of how we hired the furniture vendor.
Well, I would almost fathom the guess there's an advantage to building turf fields in the fall when I don't have to have them ready for a season right now. And your crew is super busy in August, sure, trying to get everything, in July and August, trying to get everybody ready that's playing now, versus you want to come in October and put it down.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thought, really, starting in the summer or fall, even though we do have to deal with winter. I realize that slows us down a little. There's a premium we still got to ascertain. But waiting to the spring of the following year, 21, that's when everybody's trying to load the gun, so to speak, and get out of the gate. So, yeah, that was the other logic, too.
Okay.
Jeremy, you mentioned that there was, in various positions, a little over $3 million.
Correct.
Is that today, or is that looking into the future, this is what we're going to have?
I will never give you a number that is projecting something that I don't know we have. That
so
is
we
what
are
going to
have
banked.
Additional interest.
There would still be, I would anticipate additional interest, yes.
Take a rough guess, please.
He hates that. You're really
bad. No, I understand. That's why I said, please.
I'm going to go conservative. And,
not going to hold you to it.
Yeah,
I
would go conservative from the get-go, the way that we see things lined up from when we brought Red Tree on board as our investment advisor for these about $3 million. I think we'll probably exceed that, and that would be total. So another $1 million on top of the almost, it's 1.9, so 1.1 million additional. I would anticipate probably getting interest. I think that's conservative, I hope.
If I'm understanding, so that's changing the little over 3 to a little over 4?
Correct.
Is that my, okay.
Correct. So, yes.
Jeremy said we have 4 more million, did you?
And if you use 2 times that, that's 8 million.
Booked today, the money that I can confirm for you
is
a little over $3 million.
I'm of the opinion that whatever we sold the public on the bond is what the people are expecting and what we should provide, which isn't the 5.2. How in the future we take care of that, but if you have to have an answer as far as direction, that would be my understanding.
So I'm seeing a lot of nodding. Are we comfortable? I know it's not taking a vote, there's not a motion, but with a general direction for us to move forward with design, do we want to have a target amount? Is it to get back to kind of where the design is at 7.1?
Well, the 7.1 already represents some cuts from what was allocated in the beginning.
Would it be helpful if we brought in kind of what that is, and then we can talk through maybe what was cut, and then if we want to add it back in, and then we can talk about kind of here's the money we know is available, and then you can give us some direction so we can finish design?
We can probably have that for next.
What we've already designed to share with them.
Correct.
You're looking stressed. We'll make this happen.
No, I'm thinking in my head.
He loves when we promise things for him to do.
So there's kind of a 7.1 design that's on here. And then there's a 7.1 plus, which is some of the things that have already been determined to be out of scope. And what would that look like to add to that 7.1 is what we're
asking.
That would
be, for example, do we want to go ahead and put 10 tennis courts in? Would be one of those things. So we can bring... And it's basically, Brad, the design, you have some of it here, but the design we talked through with all the coaches.
Basically the dotted line design that's on here, right?
Would be back to where we originally started. The 7.1 is basically what's in here, including the turf and all that with the baseball, softball. So we will see if we can even get Chris maybe to come next week.
Correct. So that's your question. Is it, because it wasn't a lot of scope, it was clarification or a little bit of altering the scope that came from the coaches. Just fine detail, and it may add 10,000 here, 10,000 there.
Will they have that by then?
They haven't worked on it. We kind of stopped them and said, "There's such a differential. Don't so it's going to be more effort at this time."
But I don't think it's going to be, like you said, it's details. I think that we can still give the board a general idea of what are the major things included in this number, and then what would be a rough estimate on things if you want to put them back in, and then we could get some direction from you next week.
Yeah, I mean, if Chris could come in and say, hey, on that 7.1 number, some of the stuff that you've already talked about, we're going to say plus 3% max. You know what I mean? We think it's about this. It doesn't have to be, just enough to scope to say, okay, we could think that's maybe 7.4 instead of 7.1 or whatever.
It would have to be down to the dollar, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, and the one other thing that would be helpful is kind of what Jeremy said in terms of, and here are the places where there would be availability, potential availability, if it's...
Are you saying availability of
funds?
Of private, public...
Whatever those recommendations...
You mean the donations, I think, right? You mean the money left in the bond and the bond proceeds?
Okay.
What those actual numbers are, because I didn't write them down as fast as maybe... And I think that was maybe known already, but just to see that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll see if we can get Chris or somebody from his team in here. Is there anything else that would be... helpful for that?
I would just make the observation that a couple days of seeing this before the meeting would help instead of having a drop per se.
Well, and keep in mind that our goal was not, I only moved forward because I saw you all nodding. My goal was not to make a decision today, it was to present the information today for next week, just to clarify.
I just saw a lot of nodding, so I jumped on it.
So that said, though, I mean, if we've got more questions along the way about what's in here as you're looking at it, so I mean, I know you're available kind of whenever,
right.
And then just I don't know if you guys know, but we've left 11 on Mondays, like 11 to 12 is kind of like a window Doug kind of keeps open, so that if we've got some specific questions and you say, hey Doug, I'd love to touch base with you at 11 on Monday. Not that he's not available other times, but he just kind of blocks that time in general.
So call or here. 11
on the 20th.
Okay.
That's
Junior Day.
I'll come.
Give him a
calendar.
Tell Doug,
go
home.
I did want to ask one clarification question. So I was not here when the bond issue was formulated, so I'm asking this question, but there are some things in the current budget that I believe were not part of shared with the public, i.e. the turf on the baseball, softball, air conditioning. There are things in here that are a premium to maybe Brad's point, what differentiates us. There are things on the VE list or in the current design that are not traditional. So in other words, even the CM didn't anticipate them, and now they're in the design. Many of those are on the VE list.
And that's where I think it'd be helpful. We can talk through all those with you next week, because then we can get some guidance on, yeah, we don't need that, or, wow, we would really like to have that. That's something that differentiates us. So.
Okay. We can flag some of
that. All
some of them are already there.
Because I think those are important, because I think when it was the academic building thing, it was a relatively easy line to say, does it impact our instruction, and is it noticeable? Mm-hmm. And those are pretty easy things to say yes or no to. All of these things are potentially noticeable.
Correct.
Some are probably expected. Some
things,
aren't
yes.
necessarily expected. So I think that just it's just a different conversation.
Right.
Like the air conditioning and the concession stand.
Who needs that in November?
Yeah, don't have to have it. Obviously, it would be nice to have. So those are the types of things.
Yeah.
One thing I'll just remind folks, too, is that we did not hire an architect, obviously, to fully design this facility before the bond issue. We didn't want to spend that money. So we contracted for what's called early design services with Triad. And so they gave us a number to ask for in a bond without a design building. And so that was part of why we cushioned that a little, because we knew based off of OFSC's estimates per square foot, this was a cost expect. We knew we wanted an auditorium, which is not typically in that type of budget, so we added that, athletic facilities. But keep in mind, we were going out with a bond issue on a building that wasn't designed. So extra money that we've had throughout, part of it has been just quite frankly due to inflation, construction costs going up, premium on that work, steel tariffs, etc. And some things have been things that we've decided to add as we've gone through the process that we've talked about with you all. So we kind of knew that going back, and I know some of you weren't on the board when we put the original bond on, but there was a lot of discussion about we don't have a design building. So part of this cushion we're talking about with Jeremy and that number, we knew we'd have interest. But even that little extra was originally intended. We've kind of said all along, well, if we have money to fix up some of these other buildings, we know we have all these projects. But again, the more I think about it, it's like we put that on the bond and it failed. So I hate to not deliver on what was on the bond because we're trying to take care of other buildings with money.
Yeah.
That was so. Just again, kind of trying to share some of that history.
Did you say $7 million in new interest?
Yeah. I thought it was 10.
How about take a zero off that and I'll feel more comfortable agreeing with
it. You were the only one that was on the
just
board.
Just me.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think it's important just to kind of revisit and share some of that conversation.
Because that will equip us, I'm sorry, Sherry, that'll equip us when the conversations come to us to be able to say, and I know that's a little bit slower than we might want to go, but I think it's important for us to be able to support.
Are all of the things on this potential VE list like independent? Like in the concessions building, we have the EC, and then you have reducing square footage, electrical reduction, the electrical reduction 300. Is that dependent on doing a few of the other things? Or are those, okay.
Some of them are tied, for instance, reduce the square footage is tied to the reducing of the fixtures.
So knowing which ones
are
tied together will be important too.
And some of them are independent. They could become an alternate if we say, hey, we still want to get a price. Let's design it both ways. and get a price. And if we can still award it, so to speak, that's another option for some smaller items.
And some of it, even within the electric,
some of it's independent, some of it's tied to AC, some of it's tied to square footage of the building, so it just kind of comes down to what we decide.
These numbers might change, but so, again, it's a really new process. I'm saying that.
Sounds like you.
See, I'm an architect. We met with them. They shared this.
That's how you play darts with them.
Christmas break, and then we stopped them.
Because they're moving the target.
We need to, unfortunately, get through Christmas break. We had the meeting with the coaches.
Just remember, I'm literally not
the last Friday before Christmas.
I understand.
So it's that flat. So I advise the CM and architect, don't spend fee, don't spend time.
I'm not an oracle.
They were debating.
So I like taking the precautions.
The architect
was necessarily simpler. The contingency money was still there.
Somewhere low. The full so amount. I'm going to release them to try and tweak this so it's a little more accurate
but that's
between the two of them. It might be a slightly different list you'll see next week, but the scope will be pretty similar.
Well, and then you talked about, you know, what items differentiate. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who knows this or because we don't all have the same backgrounds or experiences in even the different sports and stuff that are going on. But if we kind of have an idea of, you know, having the, you know, synthetic turf in the infield and that differentiates us from everyone around us and what that means for us, what we could do because of that. Kind of having that understanding, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. In terms of rental capacity.
Yeah, who can necessarily provide that. Also an understanding of, like, deleting some of the visitor seats, home seats. How many do we have now? Or how does, you know, a neighboring school, how many do they have? And kind of where does that kind of set us up at, having that kind of understanding? On the football stadium, will that be for football, soccer, and lacrosse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would say, I think going forward, something that, you know, we should definitely consider is spending some time on kind of formalizing agreements with the different sports and boosters. And I believe if, you know, they're going to be using concessions, the full concessions, I mean, it seems like there should be some fee for them to pay for use, and then they get, you know, above and beyond. And I mean, I even know, you know, soccer, obviously we don't get, you know, near the attendance that football does. And sometimes we use the concession stands, and then sometimes we just set up tables and somebody brought in stuff. Like, everyone's kind of doing their own thing a little bit, and I think there should probably be some procedures.
And I think there are a lot of procedures in place. We just don't work directly with them, but I can find out for you.
Mm-hmm.
I would say one thing that we have not done, so that would be something we can discuss, is when we have an organization that's directly tied to raising funds to support our students, we've not charged them rental fees.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the youth sports, we do charge rental fees. But if it's a booster organization that's using our facility to raise money for our programs, we've not charged them money.
My issue isn't the charging of the money as much as validating that the bulk of the money goes for the purpose.
Right. And I think Brian's more involved with that on the athletic side than we are, to be honest. I mean, that's kind of, he attends those meetings and works with them on that.
And to the point that's of the written agreement, if I understand right now, we don't even know if they're carrying insurance, commercial insurance for food poisoning. No answer. I would say we probably don't.
Our insurance company does allow us to carry the support organization, so they are covered under our liability.
I would prefer
the athletic boosters.
I would
at no charge to us. So,
but as a board member, I would prefer that the organization carry it because it should be an expense to the taxpayers. I understand if there's no cost associated.
Right. Out of district folks do have a requirement to show proof of insurance when they utilize our facility.
That is correct.
So that is encumbered by them. The only thing, in my understanding of our insurance policy, would be relative to our organizations.
That is correct.
Music, when they have their play. So if somebody were to get sick or slip in the bathroom or trip coming up the walkway, that is actually part of the umbrella policy that we would already have. Because they're our organization, in essence.
We're now bringing in food trucks, as an example.
They have to have insurance, their own.
And they provide us proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we should have one standard for anybody that's serving food, is all I'm saying.
Okay.
But, I mean,
you've tasted.
I suppose if we put the burden on them for the insurance, then that's less money that they can raise.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really...
Brings us back to making sure that the kids are the ones that are benefiting from the money.
Yeah.
That the people... I can tell you, I've eaten a lot of really good hot dogs at the football game. Okay.
You're getting them from the
difference. That are probably quite overpriced compared to what I used to charge on my food truck. But I did that for a reason. I want to make sure that reason is being fulfilled.
And one thing that I know I've had discussions with Brian Shelton over the last, well, since I came here, of just what does, I mentioned 9211, the support organization, what does that look like? And that maybe is something that would be good to kind of revisit, see how other school districts are like what they're requiring of those organizations. Again, a prior district I was with, there was an annual requirement that they would provide a copy of the 990 or some, hey, what are your fundraising activities planned for this year? And it was actually in the board policy as an expectation of the board. And that would be something that would be a good starting point in revisiting that policy.
Okay. And what the board, I think, that also gets to Sherry's point of what, I mean, in terms of formalizing some of these questions, having that and just being clear on it, especially as we can anticipate more activity down the road.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a great time to revisit it. And typically we will bring Brian in to do a morning athletic update for the board once a year anyway. I kind of held off on those knowing we were going to have new board members. So typically, like, our student services director does one. She's planning to do one soon. So I could schedule Brian for probably March or April to come in, and we could put together, that could be part of it, is so athletics in general updating, but then also including a segment on the boosters, how he works with them, and maybe trying to answer some of these questions that you brought up. Does that sound good? And we'll work with him.
I'm even wondering.
I mean, Mark, in the short term.
I'm even wondering if Thursday, nothing wrong with anything you said, but even Thursday to the differentiation piece, I mean, he's probably the one that's most in tune to knowing what that comparative list of school districts that we always look at are doing in terms of stadium capacity and things like that. So
he's available. I mean, I was planning on asking him on, like, rental fees and things anyway.
Yeah, but that might be just good because then he can speak a little bit more to how we stack up comparison-wise with who we might be competing with or what rental opportunities are and things of that nature.
Well, and I know that I don't want to skip ahead, but under board members' items of interest, I would also like to hear from him relative to the football coach, the process, some of the candidates, because I think that will be coming to us in terms of a vote on Thursday. So having him here.
Yeah, that wouldn't be. He could do that as well while he was here, just to maybe talk to that if he's here.
Yeah, Mark could also talk to him because
he
kind of has to join the meeting.
I forgot about that.
But if Brian's available, he's texting him, we'll certainly ask him.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to skip ahead, but tagging on to what Mr. President said.
Is that all you got?
Yeah. I've been asking for anything else.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. Item 7, the treasurer's report, which I'm pretty sure we just got a little bit ago.
Yeah, we got $8
million. That's right.
My goodness, this is a moving target.
Or was it 9?
I thought it was 9.
I thought it was 10. I thought we were double.
Say 10.
We were double digit.
For the record, is that on there, Miss?
It's still running.
I just wanted to note two items. One, just for the board, I know I put this in my update. But it always has been the plan as we've phased in our bond millage. We are, you know, right in the thick of construction right now. 2020, the calendar year, has always been that year that we've seen is going to be the bump up. And it did go up 2.84 mils from last year. Fortunately, that's about 0.75 mil lower than what we had originally planned on during the levy campaign. So it's still, I mean, it is a significant bump, not disregarding that, but I'm pleased that through the phase-in process, the growth, and quite honestly, I can't take too much credit for the economics, but fortunate economics at the point of issuing our bonds, that we have been able to come in lower than that The second item, just wanted to let you know, with the authorization in the organizational meeting, tax bills have come out, and so I will promptly, after our meeting today, start requesting our advances so we can get the funds in our account and not in the Delaware County Treasurer's account. So just those two. Wanted to make sure those two things were aware.
That'll bump that interest rate. Our interest money up, right?
That's growing by the minute. Operations, though.
Oh, we did there, so.
But that's all I have, if there's no questions.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go with board members' items of interest. Doug, do you have anything?
Yeah, I did note in the Delaware Gazette that us in Sunbury finally worked out our sewer tap fee dollar amounts. Were we part of that information to the Gazette as per the agreement?
Facts, no.
I was going to ask about that.
I sent an email to Tarek a few days ago now.
Is that the author?
He is the attorney that works. So Chris is kind of the head of Tarek. And he said, oh, you read my mind. I was just about to reach out post-holiday and see, because if you recall, they were the ones that were working on finalizing. We had a memorandum of mediation that was getting turned into an actual agreement. So we didn't even have that yet, let alone a press release. And so Tarek responded yesterday afternoon that Aaron, those of you that were here, Brockton, I think mm-hmm. his last name, was the village's attorney, that he has now gone to another firm. And so still trying to, that they're supposed to be getting this to us soon. So no, Doug, we have not even gotten the agreement, let alone a press release, and I had not realized that was put out there. We have a meeting with Tommy today. I will be
there.
Well,
that. You might inform me that there's no agreement until the agreement's finalized. I was not very happy. I can only speak for myself that they breached the agreement before the agreement was finalized. Okay? They need to understand that.
Did they vote? The only thing I'm thinking is, did they?
They voted to approve the same memo that we did.
So was that picked up by the Gazette, maybe?
The Gazette picked up. Actually, I think it was a quote from the Hat Man, Mr. Breen, that the village and the school district finally, the essence was, finally met terms of agreement on the sewer tap fee. The one thing that we actually had to pay, okay, not mentioning anything else, the point is that per the agreement, we were both supposed to take part in
a joint announcement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the breach is there. Everybody understands I'm kind of hot-headed. But unless they cure that breach, and I would use the word immediately with Tommy, that I will make a motion next Thursday to take him to court.
Was it the...
It can't be trusted.
Was that article like the recount of the meeting that they'll do sometimes? It just run through the minutes and stuff? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Not a it's special not discussion?
Not a formal press release.
Okay.
But when your attorney of record makes a statement that the district and the village finally met agreement on the sewer tap fee, to me that's a press release. He can keep his mouth shut, and then they wouldn't print it, right?
Was it well, I think the action item of the agreement?
Well, it wasn't presented in the Gazette as an item. Bingo, 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 this council did this. It was a quote from Breen.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I would, trust me, I'm not like trying to defend.
No, I understand.
But we also discussed the agreement kind of in that public meeting. And so had Gary Budzak been here, there could have been different quotes and things of that nature pulled from that. I know I made a comment about the agreement at that meeting personally.
The difference is he either went to Breen or Breen went to him and made the comment. It wasn't presented in the Gazette as a comment of part of the meeting.
Okay.
It'd be like you getting up after the meeting and going and talking to the reporter.
And just telling them, hey, I can't really give you a
yeah, and it wasn't even until. The content doesn't matter. The event is what matters to me.
Okay.
But it allowed them to put the village in a brighter light than what they should be.
I found it, if you're interested, it's in an article titled Council Gives Okay to Village's First Bed Tax. Talks about that in the first part of the article. And then it says, also during the meeting, Council approved a future development agreement between the village and the Big Walnut Board of Education. Ring said the mediation between the two was a good process regarding sanitary sewer fees and can now move forward. For its part, the school board approved the agreement during its December 12th meeting.
Which I believe Gary was here for.
He wasn't here.
No, he wasn't.
No, we were surprised he wasn't here.
We thought he would be. We even reordered the agenda.
Yeah, we reordered the agenda because we thought he'd be here.
That's my point of view.
Okay.
And my interest.
Well, that will be a discussion point today after he helps us try to get 50-some-odd thousand dollars back from Poltech.
After. After that, right?
I believe that's what he said after. I believe that's the term I used.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve, for you.
Thank you. I have three. One, I recognize we definitely have a new board rep to the Career Center. I certainly echo what you said about appreciation for Mr. Hildreth and his many years of service, not just to the Career Center, but I think he got recognized by OSBA for having 30 total years on a school board. In addition to that, I'm wondering if there's been any conversation with Mary Beth on either who the person is going to now is or how that kind of came about.
I talked to her that as we worked through the process and realized there was a term limit in our policy, which we had put in, didn't realize that the term limit thing went away. I didn't know that until Mary Beth told me in November that Jim's seat was up, by the way. And then she mentioned it to our superintendent's group, and we were all, we didn't realize that the term limits even went away. So we didn't even know that to change our policy, I guess, until the seat was up, just, I guess, to provide that since I was in that original conversation. But anyway, so as we were talking through that and came to that realization, I told her that the board would be meeting with a few potential candidates that we'd opened it for applications, that a decision would be made today at our organizational meeting, and then I'd reach out to her this afternoon.
Thank you. And my only reason for that question is to make sure that relationships with the Career Center, while sometimes tenuous, can be smooth.
Yeah, I think she understands.
Second thing that I had is relative to the snow day during the exam week and the practice of pushing the exams to the second semester in the beginning of that, and wondering if in the future, while this is a very unlikely event and probably hasn't happened in a decade, I mean, I don't know the last time. And I did reach out to Brad Felke and say, hey, man, in your years, how many times did we have a snow day during exams? Wanting to maybe think about how that can be rearranged or why that came about the way it did in terms of needing to push the exams back. We used to have, I know the high school used to have a certain makeup day, which was never really necessary because it hasn't been utilized before.
We don't fill that in anymore because it's taken another day of instruction. So we're kind of rolling the dice that we're not taking another day of instruction. I know my daughter took hers early during the periods in the afternoon. I think kids, a lot of kids were able to do that if they wanted to.
Right.
Honestly, that was what Andy wanted to do and recommended that his team discussed, and so I supported that.
I'd like to maybe rethink that moving forward, if there's any way that that availability that some kids went and took the initiative and did that and went forward and did that. I do know that some families were still on it. Again, it's a decision of families. It shouldn't be incumbent upon us to do everything in support of that, but some families were extending their vacation through that two-day period that Brad brought up, and that just pushes all those types of things backwards.
Well, I think the staff, you know, at least in talking with the administrators, if somebody's out, they would be flexible and work with them on getting that made up. I guess that's one of those things that, you know, we can always revisit and look at, but at the end of the day, if that's what our administrative team has kind of talked through with the staff and a recommendation that they make to me, unless I see a big, because I think you could argue either way on that, I'm not going to Trump Andy when I think I need to, or Trump a principal when I think I need to, but you know, certainly something I can look at and reevaluate, but in the moment I didn't think it was something I felt like I needed to trump him on.
Right, and again, I'm not even saying for the very few times that that will even come up in the history of this district. Mm-hmm. Just wondering if there can be an additional thought to that.
And we're trying to take less days with exams than we used to. If you recall, we used to spend quite a few days on exams between semester and end of year. I think we had 2 whole weeks or 8 days at least. It were like 4 days.
I think four.
So we've tried to reduce that down with the idea that, you know, we're taking instructional time.
And my third question was going to be relative to by voting on the football coach, which I assume will be coming up. I know that he's met with some of the student athletes. I've heard a lot of positive in reference to this gentleman and who he is. Would like to just maybe hear more about that and some of the other, not by name, but some of the other candidates or their credentials that were looked at and what differentiated the one that was selected moving forward. Those were my three items. Thank you.
Is that something that the whole board wants to hear, or would you want to talk to Mark about it?
I mean, I think if Brian or Mark can speak to, at least for me, next Thursday night, here's the things we were looking for that we think we found. And, you know, I would assume, at least from a couple of the informal discussions, you found some other options, too, that, you know, we certainly like the one we've got, but we were pleasantly surprised. It's kind of the theme that I've heard of the folks that kind of were hitting the mark for what you were looking for. So, at least for me, just being able to publicly talk about this is exactly what we were after, and we're excited to bring this person on board. For me, it can just be an introduction into the whole discussion of how you made the hire and things like that. I mean, you do the same thing when you're doing some administration positions and things like that. You know, we were looking for somebody that had this experience or, you know, demonstrated these skills or whatever. I mean, just be good to hear as an intro.
With me, it's more the process than the choice. I did go online and checked out. He seems to be a good pick. He was introduced a couple weeks ago, and we haven't, as a board, made a decision. To me, that's a little backwards. In other words, he shouldn't 1/5 here. I would feel more comfortable if we, in the future, made a choice among all of us instead of a portion of us, present that person to the public, and then come to us for confirmation. Because what if we didn't confirm?
Well, and we always introduce a pending board approval, obviously.
But to the public.
High profile of it and Christmas break being there, which is why we talked to you ahead of time, that was going to kind of be the process, and we were in communication with Brad on that as we went through.
I think
he's obviously excited and gung-ho. He's on Christmas break, but we did introduce him just so you know, pending board approvals, we always do.
Yeah, and I guess I get nervous because you never know what can pop up, right? Not that you didn't do a job vetting, right? But stuff happens. I guess I look at it more as of a risk mitigation for you guys. You know what I mean? Like, if we've approved him, the risk kind of falls to us to say, well, why'd you approve him? But if something were to have happened in the last couple of weeks, the risk is back to you all because it's like, well, we never approved him. But
we typically do that. It was kind of with the timing of break and everything that we went ahead and introduced him.
Like I said, I'm 1/5. It's a lot like when it hits my ears, it's a lot like Bream making a statement to the Gazette or the public's perception of a rubber stamp at this board.
Yeah.
And we should do everything within our power not to show that or even give the
impression
of it to the community. But he did. Everything I found on him, he seems to be A-okay, and I hope that I hope his coaching is more to the spirit of the sport than it is to a championship, because that's what we need. And how's he going to fit in academically? Have you given a thought?
We do.
Or is that some discussion further, later?
I'd rather discuss it in executive session.
That's fine.
Next week, if that's okay. Or we, even today. But
that's
basically,
fine.
We, depending on some movement that we have, there could be a couple of options. But we have a plan A and a plan B.
We can discuss it in executive.
Unfortunately, the timing that when you need to hire a football coach doesn't coincide with the timing of when teaching jobs are always open. So, to get the cream of the crop.
There's another question for later on that topic. So.
Okay.
Well, and just to speak very briefly on the note of the timing of everything as well, because we always not just advertise it as pending board approval, but typically we're not really bringing the person in and really trying to get them up and running before the board actually approves. It's very atypical of this process. Yeah. The timing of things and wanting to control the message as opposed to the message getting out there, leaking, and then the board didn't inform the public or the school district didn't inform the public. They're finding out from people that maybe were on the committee or maybe he told somebody in his hometown that now told somebody up here. We really wanted to control the message and really, you know, he was excited to be able to see and start the process of some things. So it's atypical. I agree with you. It's not typically what we want to do, but also we want to make sure we are controlling that message, that it wasn't something that somebody found out through somebody else, and now we have rumors flying that we have to temper, as well as getting the announcement out there. So I hear you, and I agree with what you're saying on that.
Well, just along those lines, Angie had mentioned his name as the guy that you were going to make an offer to at that athletic facilities meeting.
Correct.
And so she showed me his Twitter profile, so I pulled it up. And then a couple days later, I pulled it up, and there was already somebody from the community following him before he had even accepted the offer.
Yes.
So that speaks, I think, to...
Quite honestly, as well, when we include, and not that I'm assuming or placing blame on somebody from the committee, but when we include people on the committee that are not school district employees...
Yeah.
The confidentiality understanding is something that doesn't always stick.
Yeah.
And so when we include people, the more people we include from the outside in a very specific interview and conversations and decision-making, the more likely that message is going to get out there before we even have an opportunity to do it. So it's always a timing piece. We want to include the community, and at the same time, it makes it difficult to include the community on these kind of things.
Sure. So we need to beat more people, right?
You signed up for that, you can be our
friend. Sherry, what do you have?
Just excited to officially be part of the board and working with y'all.
Glad to have you.
I have one item. I don't know how many members of the board might know him or about this, but Jim Evans, the president of the Library Board of Directors, he passed away unexpectedly, I believe on December 27th. He had been part of the Library Board of Directors since the mid-1990s and has played a huge role in that organization, and along with many volunteer, the Columbus City Volunteer Firefighter, Columbus City Firefighters Association, and just lots of charitable organizations. And so they will be in the process of replacing him as a member, finding a replacement board member. And also he's served as president for probably, I don't know, 6 years or so, and just gave lots of time to that organization. So just like to extend condolences to his family and the library community as a whole. So.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. That's unfortunate news. Such a great group over there. The only thing that I had, it's actually kind of funny, Steve brought up exams. It was really just more of a kind of thing that hit me. And during that whole exam week was the thought of 2020 and working away from kind of a certain assessments as only being the way to make decisions. And I'm kind of like, why are we spending so much time on exams and juggling our calendar to do exams? And I'm by no means qualified enough to answer that question. And I don't mean that as I don't know what you're doing. But it just kind of hit me like, well, you know, does the exam model need to evolve as that whole 2020 model needs to evolve.
We've had a lot of those discussions, and some of those exams have turned into not a traditional test. They're more project-oriented. Are we where we want to be now?
Yeah.
But definitely we're trying to push that evolution and still keep some balance of those kids that go into college being able to experience that cumulative exam. So trying to keep a balance between the two.
Yeah, just kind of hit me one day.
Yeah, we've had similar discussions.
I am sure you have.
High school's a big ship to turn.
Item 9 is public participation. Seeing as there are no publics to participate, I'll move to number 10, just business items, and it's recommended the board approve the following course changes and additions beginning with the 2021 school year. Could I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Leanna, is there a second?
A second.
And Sherry.
These were presented last meeting for you to look at, and I know Andy and Jen were there at that time, and there were some questions. Do you have any additional questions that I can attempt to answer?
Good here.
Just a reminder that these are with our existing staff, just kind of reconfiguring some offerings based on student survey interest.
I guess I do have a question. Will there be is there a formal course request number that if it's mm-hmm. in? Okay.
Yeah. So they're offering, especially in English, they have multiple ones, and then depending on student request,
Is that number? Is there a solid number for that?
We talked about a number, but I don't remember what it is.
Okay.
I can tell you that where we are, and Mark and I just had a discussion with Andy. We were working on staffing yesterday afternoon with our cabinet, instructional cabinet, on looking at where we had FTEs and conversations. We're going to try to push another core ed out of here, there, and not add one. We're adding one elective because they're really short on electives. Kids are getting locked out. As we continue to do that, to try to stretch our budget, it means classes can't be sitting,
six or...
Obviously, yeah. I mean, there are extreme situations with, AP, Calculus, BC. You're going to have probably 8 kids in. But overall, the majority of courses are sitting pretty high because we've got to try to utilize staff as fully as we can. And Mark does a good job, too, of sitting down and... We always look at those numbers with them when they kind of run it and make sure, we want to make sure that we can sit here and know our staff's being utilized. And so it's that, we always kind of check, obviously it's easier to look at an elementary and see, oh, we've got 24, 25, 25 in this grade level at this building, but kind of running through the secondary schedules and making sure that we don't have a lot of really small number classes in one place, and then other classes are sitting in 32s, 33s. Now that's inevitable, as you know, with the way band and choir hit, and with the way certain courses are singletons, but we try to make sure that we're using staff. And I can tell you our high school staff, and you probably know this, but they teach more sections than most schools in the OCC do. Typically, most of our core teachers are teaching 6 classes. And that's unusual. So we are utilizing them as much as we can. Typically, they'll teach one or two less classes, and they may cover a study hall. They may have an extra plan period, depending on other duties they might have, but they typically only teach 4 or 5, and we have the majority of ours teaching 6. Just as an FYI.
And that comes up relative to this conversation only from the standpoint that one of the most helpful things back in December when you had our onboarding,
mm-hmm.
I really appreciated that FTE report.
Sure.
And I know that that's probably a moving target to this point, but being able to have some visibility and keep some visibility, I don't know if that's a quarterly thing or... Mm-hmm. But as we're looking to approve the curriculum, that definitely provides context for...
Mm-hmm.
What makes sense?
Typically, we just do that once a year because we don't add a lot of staff throughout the year, but then Mark will do in his HR report.
Okay.
He will tell, you're going to see on the hiring, this is a replacement, this is 90+% of replacements. Occasionally, we might have, we're adding an educational aid because we had a student move in that needs a 101 or whatever, so he will tell that in his HR update.
And so we just use that FTE report as a guiding document, thinking off of that.
The FTE report is the annual report, and then everything goes off that. And I started that HR report probably about 6 months ago or so at the request of the board with specifically recognizing replacements versus ads, and that way kind of, yeah, kind of envisioning, hey, here's the initial document. Okay, we've added two assistants, and so we haven't added any teachers this year, as very typically we don't add teachers. But yeah, it is a monthly HR report before going into the HR items.
And he does that. The reason the timing of the FTE report is because in our business, obviously, the bulk of ads happen right at the beginning of the school year. So once the dust has settled from all the beginning of the school year hires, those are all captured in the FTE report, and then he just updates through his monthly. Anything else? Are we still on courses?
Yep.
Sorry. Anything else on classes from anybody?
I think you're ready.
Ms. Lee?
Yes.
Ms. Stork?
Yes.
Mr. Kraub?
Yes.
Mr. Fuji?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes. Item 11, schedule next board meeting, next regularly scheduled board meeting. No longer pending board approval as of about 2 hours ago. This coming Thursday, January 16th at 6:30, right here, same place. Item 12.1, it's recommended the board enter executive session to consider employment of a public employee or official to negotiate with other political subdivisions respecting requests to economic development assistance. Can I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Jeremy, whenever you're ready.
Ms. Lee?
Yes.
Mr. Fuji?
Yes.
Mrs. Dorsch?
Yes.
Mr. Kraub?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes. And we have no expectation of coming back into public session to take action on anything. Okay.